So hello and welcome back to another TRU Talks with me, Chris Heal. And on this episode, we'll be taking a look at, about the new proposals for a new look championship, potentially, which seems to have been thrusted into the spotlight over the last few weeks or so. And today we've been very kindly joined by former Saracens chief executive, Ed Griffiths, who is on the line and is the man behind the championship proposal. So Ed, thanks very much for giving you time to have a chat to us on Talking Rugby Union today. And first of all, as I said there, the proposal from yourself towards the RFU seems to be a lot of traction over the last couple of weeks or so. So could you briefly maybe summarise what you've been able to put forward to the RFU so far?
Well, it's probably difficult to summarise in a 76-page document in just a few words. But, I mean, it's not a proposal simply to the RFU. I suppose it's a proposal primarily to the championship clubs, and then from the championship clubs to the RFU, indeed to the premiership clubs, to NCA, to Buck Super Rugby. It's basically a proposal that tries to find a role for the championship within the structure of English rugby, and it's also within that proposal is a reorganisation of the pathway between school and the and the Premiership and the England teams beyond. So, I mean, it's a fairly comprehensive proposal, which is at this stage a discussion document, which is, out for discussion and debate with, as I say, Championship clubs, the RFU, Premiership clubs, NCA, Bucks, and other stakeholders as well, including potential broadcasters and sponsors.
And from all the reports so far that we've been reading, Ed, it seems that those meetings that you've had with sort of the RFU and Bill have been quite constructive and productive. So is that really sort of a positive for you so far going forward in these early stages?
I think so. I mean, I'm under no illusions that, you know, you say the word change in any environment and people usually run as far away as fast as possible. So I'm aware of that. And I'm also, you know, aware that these are fairly radical and fundamental changes to propose for the for English rugby. So, you know, I'm not by any sense trivializing it, but I do think that the game has reached a point where it's worth looking at not just the future of the championship, but also the future of the pathway. And the model that we are sort of discussing, I think, you know, deals with the pathway and deals with a lot of the problems with the pathway at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And is it positive that the RFU have come out, and well, we spoke to an RFU spokesperson last weekend and they said they're very supportive of any proposals put forward for the future of the game. So is that positive for you as well?
It is, but you know, I mean, there's a lot more detail to it as well. And you know, and just to be clear that, you know, the championship clubs, we had a fairly detailed presentation to them at Harpenden Rugby Club a couple of weeks ago, and what the championship clubs did was they overwhelmingly supported the four core principles of the league, which are to nurture the finest English rugby talent, to connect and strengthen the rugby community, to set a new standard in player welfare, and four, to ensure financial stability and move towards self-sustainability. So that's what the championship clubs have overwhelmingly supported, and they then unanimously gave me a mandate to continue discussions on the plan. The process that we're involved with now is a fairly detailed consultation process with the RFU, with PRL, with universities, as I say, with broadcaster sponsors, the NCA, Bucks, etc., 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 with a view to going back to the championship clubs with a firm and, if you like, nailed down proposal at the end of August, and then it'll be for the championship clubs to decide if that's something they want to adopt or not.
Yeah, and you touched on having that unanimous support, Ed, from the championship clubs. And have you been able to start those discussions with premiership clubs and those other parties you mentioned?
Yes, yeah. I mean, every premiership club now has the report, and you know, in conversation with a lot of them. And as I say, you know, there are some who are wary of it, you know, and at the core of this proposal is an idea to replace the current 13 Premiership Club academies with six regional academies from where players are drafted to Premiership clubs. Now, you know, we can discuss the merits of that, but I think it's true that there are some clubs that will regard rightly that their academies have been very successful in the past, and that they would want to instinctively and maybe emotionally to keep those academies. I suppose the argument for this new model, why would you put the replace the Premiership 13 Premiership PRL shareholder club academies with six regional academies, is one that we're engaged in with those Premiership clubs at the moment.
Because I was going to come on to that a little bit later, Ed, but as we're talking about it now, and you've used the word pathway quite a lot in so far in this chat, and is that something that is massively important to this proposal about sort of creating that pathway for young players to develop? And with those academies you said there, it does give those players a chance to really develop in the Championship.
It does. I think the key problem at the moment is game time. So you get the finest young players in the country who go into these Premiership academies, and especially with the demise of the A-League this year, and the A-League has been a slightly unsuccessful competition, not always supported by all clubs in the past anyway. But there's actually no rugby for the best young players in the country to play. They will go into these Premiership club academies and just spend too much time holding tackle backs. So what this proposal says is go into a regional academy where you will get enough game time, either through playing for a Championship club, which is associated with that regional academy, or by playing in Bucks Super Rugby, which has obviously come on in massive strides in recent years and which will be further enhanced by this proposal, or in matches between the inter-academy matches. So the main benefits of the regional academy system would be, one, regular game time for these young players, and secondly, of equal importance, is a parallel pathway of either education or training. So with each academy being based at a university and that university being supported by associated educational institutions to offer a full range of educational training, you get, the young player has the opportunity to get world-class coaching, the best coaching you could get for their rugby, with parallel educational training. And I think from a Premiership club competition, you know, there are sort of there are five motivations really why this model would work for the Premiership clubs. The first is financial, that each Premiership club would be able to save between £600,000 and £900,000 per year by closing their full-time academy and concentrating all their time, energy, and resources on the careful construction and maintenance of a winning senior squad. So there's a financial motive. Second is that each Premiership club would then attend the annual draft and recruit exactly the players they need in precisely the positions where they're required, a much more efficient and cost-effective method than identifying teenagers, pulling them through the club academy and hoping players emerge where and when required. Third is that coach, executive and board time can be focused on developing a senior squad, leaving responsibility for managing the pathway to others. In essence, PRL clubs will be able to turn up to the annual draft and pick the ripe fruit for the professional game without the hassle of planting, fertilising and nurturing the tree. The fourth point is emerging player salaries will be controlled because the finest young players in England will leave school and move into a regional academy without requiring the services of an agent. And the value of their first three-year contract will be set by the salary designated to the round of the draft in which they're picked. So that salary control at the lower end of the game. And then lastly, the pathway, currently unregulated, inefficient and expensive, will be smooth, delivering to PRL clubs a stream of excellent, reasonably priced talent. So I understand there's a massive emotional pull among some Premiership clubs to retain their academies. But I suppose the submission of this proposal is that actually there's a better way forward.
Yeah, and I mean, you'll know, Adam, that I know as well, working for Talking Rugby Union, that you do get players in the Championship now who talk so positively about it. It does give them a platform to hone their skills. But what you're suggesting there is that these young players can have a more holistic approach to life. It isn't just going into an academy, playing Championship rugby and taking the next step. It's the whole package, really.
Absolutely. And I've sat often with, in my days at Saracens, you'd sit with a 17-year-old, highly talented player and their parents. And their parents will be concerned because the youngster's leaving school. He's obviously got a rugby ability, but they're nervous that they're going to put all their eggs, if you like, in the rugby basket, and that a parallel education and training won't be possible. So I think in this model, you are putting a youngster into a regional academy process where there is a guaranteed successful outcome. Either he'll move into professional rugby when and where he's ready, or he will have education and training that will ensure that he moves into employment and has a successful outcome that route. So I think it's a much better process for the younger players as well.
Yeah, and he touched on the draft style as style proposal as well there, Ed. Is that also a link to what we talked about before, that these young players can play 25, 30 matches in the Championship, develop the skills there, and then they do have the potential chance to step up into the Premiership rather than being thrusted straight into the top flight?
That's right. And I think it enables players to move to the Premiership when they're ready. So Amaro Itoje might come out of school, have 1 year in the academy. So we're proposing a mandatory 1 year, at least in the academy. You can't go straight from school into the Premiership. So 1 year in the academy, and then he may be ready. Then he may be ready physically and emotionally for the Premiership, and then he can go on. However, there are many late developers which are currently failed by the current system, but these late developers could be in the academy for 3 or even 4 years.
Okay.
Tight head props, type five in general, scrum halves, oddly enough, tend to be late developers as well. And they won't be left behind. So it's a more effective and a more cost-efficient path.
Yeah. We talk about developing players there, Ed, but it's also about these teams being sustainable as well going forward. Because, I mean, we've seen with the current climate at the moment, that's not helped at all. But in terms of your vision for the teams, is the kind of way you're looking at it is that these teams can be self-sustaining, the safeguarding at the moment, and then they can stand on their own feet going forward?
That's right. I mean, I think if you stand back and look at club rugby, it's that, you know, club rugby has been very generously endowed, if you like, by wealthy men at various clubs over the past 25 years since the game turned professional. Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt that without this generosity and without this, you know, huge investments at many clubs, the club game would not have progressed in the way that it has. However, I think that we're getting to a point now within English rugby, and this may have been accelerated by the pandemic, whereby we have to get towards sustainability. It actually doesn't help a club, ultimately, for a wealthy man to arrive, to indulge the club with unlimited resources for a period of time. And why it doesn't ultimately help the club is that party ends at some point. And then, as we saw, you know, with Richmond many years ago, when the benefactor goes, the club can slide down the leagues at an alarming rate. So what we're trying to get towards is a league which doesn't rely on the generosity of a few wealthy men, a few rugby fanatics, but a league that actually stands on its 2 feet. And there's a very simple method behind that, and that is to say, work out what the commercial revenue is, divide the commercial revenue by 12, the number of clubs in the league, and that's the amount of money you can spend on players. Not a penny more, not a penny less. Now, that centralized model will do two things. Number one is it'll make clubs sustainable, because clubs will only have to pay for their rugby operations, their coaching, physio, S&C staff, medical staff, out of the revenue that they retain, which is revenue from gates, season tickets, events, and food and beverages on match day. So they can comfortably cover that revenue from their those costs, those rugby operations costs from their revenue. But it means that they're sustainable. So now the clubs will not rely on the generosity of wealthy men to exist. And has a byproduct is that with each club spending exactly the same on players, not a penny more and not a penny less, that you suddenly have a competitive league. And then, you know, people, one director of rugby said to me from one of the Championship clubs, said, oh, but what's our point of difference? I said, well, the point of difference is you. The point of difference is the quality of the coaching, the quality of the player selection, the quality of the player development. That's the point of difference. But all of a sudden, we go from having one of the world's least competitive competitions in the Championship, because it's distorted by the Premiership club that is relegated each year into the Championship. We go from one of the least competitive leagues to one of the most competitive leagues, and a truly competitive league where anyone can beat anybody on any given day lies at the heart of creating commercial value for broadcasters and sponsors. Makes it more exciting for everybody.
Yeah, and there's a strand to that as well, Ed, this proposal to push the pause button, if you like, on promotion and relegation.
That's right. So promotion relegation engages the passions of people in rugby almost more than any other issue, and I completely understand why. And this proposal does not advocate the end of promotion relegation. No, it advocates better promotion relegation. And again, now the current system simply doesn't work, because you have a championship club that, if they were by any chance to get promoted, they'd be promoted to the Premiership, where they do not have P shares and do not have the same amount of central revenue as a Premiership club. So to get promoted to the Premiership is going to cost the promoted club tens of millions of pounds simply to try and compete. So what we're proposing here is, as you say, a four-year moratorium, which could be a three-year moratorium. There could be some flexibility in the area, but nonetheless a moratorium where the leagues can settle, the Premiership can settle, the Championship, the new Championship can settle, and then to have promotion relegation by criteria. And what that means is that each club can be assessed in terms of performance on the field, crowd attendances, financial resources, training ground and stadium infrastructure. And then against that assessment, if a club matched the criteria to be promoted, then they could be promoted to the Premiership, and they would do so in such a way that they would get an even share of revenue when they got to the Premiership. So we're certainly not proposing an end to promotion relegation. We're proposing better and fairer promotion relegation.
Yeah, I guess that gives those clubs who do want to get promoted a real chance to stay in themselves in the top, like, because they've had that 4 years in building themselves up, if you like.
That's right. And there are some purists that say, oh, no, English rugby must be a ladder. It must be automatic promotion relegation. And that's fine. But they sometimes need to look beyond the pure theory and look at the practical realities of English rugby. And that's what this proposal has tried to address. You've got a situation at the moment where the Premiership clubs have moved away from the rest of the game. Mm-hmm. And what we need to try and do is to rebuild those connections in a proper structured way. And I think promotion relegation by criteria is the best way of doing it.
Yeah, and one of the things you mentioned before, Ed, I just wanted to pick up on, was player welfare being paramount. Is that where the North South side of the league as well? Because we know how much teams travel and players travel, and it takes up time during the weekend. Is that part of the North South divide as well?
I think it is. I think the two-conference system, there's a couple of benefits of that. One, it preserves local derbies, which we know people want to play. So you obviously play home and away against your local teams. Mm-hmm. Two, it provides a good platform for expansion. And, you know, we'd look at initially the new so-called the English Championship having two conferences of six teams each. But we hope that within 2 years that would expand to two conferences of eight teams each, eight clubs each. Yeah. So it provides a good basis for that. But what we won't compromise on is 16 league matches. Now, we've introduced other competitions, reviving divisional rugby, creating space for county rugby, reviving a national knockout cup competition. So these are things which have worked well for English rugby in the past, and will enhance the season and create new opportunities for sponsors and broadcasters, and create a bit of light and shade within the season so it doesn't become a monotonous grind through the winter. But at the core of this proposal is we need to attack the consensus which has grown within rugby that to get more revenue, you need to play more matches. You need more revenue, so you need to play more matches. Now, that's what you'll hear up and down the country, not only at clubs, but even at national union level as well. And we need to get away from that for the simple reason. Well, there are two reasons. One is that it's commercially not true. So commercially, around the world, the leagues that maximise their commercial rights are the ones that play fewer, bigger matches.
Right.
That's the way to grow commercial revenue. The NFL is the best example of all, where they only have 16 regular matches between September and January, and that's it. It doesn't go on for 9 months endlessly, and they have the largest commercial values in the world. So there's a commercial reason to have fewer, bigger matches. But in rugby, there's a medical absolute imperative, because as administrators, we cannot continue sending these young men into this physically demanding game weekend after weekend after weekend, because there will be a physical toll that's played on these men, not maybe next week or next month or next year, but in 10, 20 or 30 years. And I think we need to be very mindful of that. And as a game, we need to address that challenge and say that we cannot send people out to be playing 30, 40 matches a year. It's just completely unsustainable from a medical point of view. and we need to address that. So I think rugby needs to get away from this idea that more matches equals more revenue, and get away, start moving towards fewer, bigger matches, which will grow revenue and will enhance player welfare.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And just a couple more for me looking forward now in terms of what your next steps are as well, because I know there's probably still going to be hurdles for you to overcome in terms of getting anything. I guess the clubs do have different ambitions, and the financial circumstances as well are all different for those 12 clubs. So are you still envisioning challenges ahead for you over the next few months or so?
No, absolutely. And I'm not in any sense saying that all the championship clubs have endorsed these proposals. Just to make that crystal clear, that is not the case. The championship clubs have shown overwhelming support for the core principles of the league, as I alluded to earlier. But the championship clubs will only vote on a new model, which is nailed down, clear and guaranteed, hopefully towards the end of August. Now, to get to that new model, obviously all the discussions we're having at the moment are continuing, and that's what we hope to get to. Where it ends up is, I don't know. I mean, it's not easy because, unfortunately, over the last 25 years, English rugby has become a very fractured game. There's a lot of mistrust. They question your motives. They say what's behind it. You know, factually, in this proposal, I was asked to do this bit of work by the championship without being paid, and I've not sought any payment for this work at all. It's just somebody who's tried to use some years in rugby to look at the model, to take consultations from all sorts of people within rugby and in associated groups, and try to come up with a model that makes sense for the game. So, you know, those open-handed discussions will continue over the next few weeks, and hopefully a consensus will emerge. And on the back of that consensus, we can then put a clear proposal to the championship clubs. And if that is approved, then, you know, try and take the process forward and move forward for the benefit of the championship, yes, but also for the broader game in England.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you've probably touched on my last question there, but I was going to say, you know, once you get over these hurdles and get ticks in the boxes, is sort of the pinnacle for you to have the championship as a flagship for the grassroots game? Because you said pathway a lot, like as I mentioned before, but it's all about creating that clear pathway for players to get to that top level if they want to or not.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's no question that, you know, English rugby is much more than the England team. English rugby is much more than the England team and 13 Premiership shareholders. You know, there are thousands of clubs across the country, and another element of this model is that the championship assumes a role as, if you like, guardians of the game, and ensures that there are connections between all those in England who are interested in rugby but also who want to be interested in rugby and want to have an opportunity to enjoy the game, whether it's as a player, a supporter, administrator or referee or in any capacity. So, you know, the championship has a pivotal role. I think it has a bright future as a vibrant competitive league which embodies the best of rugby's traditions, but it also has a role to play as guardians of the game, as a league that shares and recognizes its responsibility to the rest of the game. And what we've tried to do in this model is take best practice from around the world, a lot of the elements from American sport, which has proved commercially very successful, but not simply to bring American sport and land it here, but to take elements of American sport and apply it sensitively to a traditional English rugby framework. And that's the model that we're asking people to consider. And, you know, and so far, it's been gratifying that people are at least open-minded and pragmatic, and those discussions are continuing. So, you know, we'll see where they go.